What a difference Jesus makes. In a situation I think we all can appreciate, the United States Postal Service was changing its rates for first-class postage. And the day before the change was to take effect, a long line of people waited to buy first-class postage stamps at a small-town post office. The little post office was running low on stamps because of the high demand and was selling only a limited supply to each person so as to help as many people as possible. The news of the post office's rationing was greeted with a great deal of anger and frustration as the customers wanted to purchase more than the post office was willing to sell. The solitary postal clerk was taking constant verbal and emotional beatings from one customer after another. She looked really ragged from the ordeal and was just about done in. One of the customers that day was waiting patiently in line. When it was this customer's turn, she purchased her allotted quota of stamps and decided to help the clerk out. She said in a loud voice for everyone to hear in the line behind her, "What do you mean you're running out of stamps? After all, I've only known about this price hike for 3 or 4 weeks. I've put it off, and now I come in here at the last minute with all the rest of these people, and you tell me you're running out of stamps? Well, I never." She gave the postal clerk a big wink, paid for her stamps, and left. The postal clerk had brightened considerably, and you could have heard a pin drop among the people as she left the post office. Perspective. I mean, being able to see from another point of view. It may be that having perspective or a multitude of perspectives is the most critical skill we can attain in our relationships with one another. Sometimes we refer to it as walking in another person's shoes or trying to see through someone else's eyes. The reality is, however, that we often go through life with tunnel vision or blinders on. Boy, it's been a long time maybe since you had a horse reference. Blinders are, of course, the leather eye shields that they used to put on horses so they weren't startled when something came up beside the horse and entered their peripheral view. With blinders on, we see only what we ourselves perceive as truth or reality. In fact, it's not uncommon when we got those blinders on for us to get angry when other people do not see things the way we see them. I kid you not that one time while I was the pastor of Maple Avenue Baptist Church in Brownsburg, we had a church meeting. And one of our more outspoken members of the church came with a t-shirt on. And it read on the t-shirt, "You are entitled to your opinion as long as it's the same as mine." It may as well have said, "I've got blinders on." What we forget is that often our own prejudice, our own emotional states, our own experiences cloud our perspective. Such a clouding of perspective is one of the reasons that counseling is such an important thing for us to have. It helps us to see things more objectively. When Isaiah writes the words that we read this morning, he is proposing to Israel that they adopt a new perspective. As I mentioned over the last couple of weeks, no one could blame the people of Israel for being discouraged, for feeling utterly helpless. For many Israelites, there must have been a dark and foreboding thought that God had abandoned them. After all, how else do you explain all the terrible stuff that was happening? So imagine sitting somewhere and listening to Isaiah announce these words on behalf of God. "The Spirit of the Sovereign Lord is upon me because the Lord has anointed me to bring good news." Good news. Really? Isaiah, are you yourself blind? Can you not see what's going on here? What good news? I am sure that Isaiah may have got the same reaction as people did when, remember Bobby McFerrin? Do you remember him? Going around singing that little ditty, "Don't worry, be happy." Oh, come on. What therefore is Isaiah trying to do here? Change our perspective. That's what he's doing. Yes, that's what he wanted to do. That was his goal. Isaiah is not blind to the circumstances of his people. It is just that he's calling on Israel to see beyond themselves to the greater work of God. One of the lessons of Isaiah is that nothing narrows our perspective like the immediacy of our own personal struggles and pain, especially chronic pain. As an example, you know, it's really hard to care for your neighbor when you yourself suffer daily from severe back pain. I get it. It's really hard to concern yourself with climate change and a conference about it in South Africa when you don't have a job. Our perspective shrinks more and more with each personal challenge. The Israelites were suffering with hunger, foreign oppression, bad leadership. They couldn't see any good news anywhere. Actually, for Israel, no news would have been great news. Nevertheless, Isaiah declares that it's his mission, his God-anointed mission, to bring good news to the people. Good news to the poor, meaning to those who are downtrodden or disadvantaged by life. Good news to the brokenhearted. Actually, more accurately, it says to bind up the brokenhearted. Isaiah is saying the good news will soothe. It will restore to wholeness people. Everyone suffering from any kind of human breakdown will be put back together. Good news to the captives. They're going to be freed. Now, he's not talking about criminals here. He's talking about people who are sold into slavery because of debt. Isaiah is alluding to the year of the Lord's favor, or the year of Jubilee, when all debts would be forgiven and everything would be restored to its rightful owner. All unjust restriction placed on people will be removed. To bring it to a single thought, Isaiah is saying that all causes of human sorrow will be eliminated. The good news goes on. Isaiah reveals that God will give his people a crown of beauty. The people of Israel will be like strong oaks that God plants, giving God glory. The ruins of cities will be restored. You can even think of Nehemiah as an example of this. The breakdowns of the past will be mended. Even things that we thought long ago were irreparable are going to be made whole. Foreigners will be your servants. Not slaves, by the way. In other words, other nations will be partners in this work of restoration. Riches and prosperity will flow into Jerusalem. All through Judah, people will be doing very well. Justice, too, will be the order day. God will not tolerate any wrongdoing. The people will be dressed in the clothes of salvation, draped in the robes of righteousness. Renewal and rebirth will be everywhere. What a grand picture, eh? It's a picture of hope. It's a picture that's attractive, at least to me, on many levels. I mean, who wouldn't want this? But is it realistic? Look around the world, and we don't see it. And daily we're bombarded with messages in the media of one crisis after another. We are promised prosperity, you and I. Our pensions are dwindling. Joy, where do you find that? Shame and dishonor, it's all over the place now, isn't it? Every day in the newspaper, someone else is being called out. Blessed? Oh, please. How long has it been since we felt truly blessed? Our clothing of salvation and righteousness, oh, it's just like filthy rags that we mentioned a week or so ago. How can Isaiah say these things? And then, how can Jesus repeat them? Did you know that? Luke 4:16-22, Jesus uses these very words to describe himself. All we see is struggle and pain. Where's the good news? Did you catch that? All we see. All I see. That's the issue, isn't it? It's perspective again. All that matters is how I see reality and my experience in this world. Let's entertain for a moment, just a moment, the possibility that the reason things seem so bad is because that's how we see them. And even how we think we should see them. I don't know how many of you have ever been to a carnival or even the Norfolk County Fair and had the opportunity to go into a funhouse. You ever been in one of those things? You know, the funhouse is a ride or a structure where everything's kind of distorted. Floors are moving and they're spinning. And usually there's always mirrors, right? Loads and loads of mirrors. These mirrors are funny mirrors. They're distorted. Some mirrors make us look squatty and fat. I don't need help with that, but anyway. Some of the mirrors make us look tall and thin. I like that one. The question is, are any of these distortions the real picture of us? Any of them? Of course not. Remember that famous verse by the Apostle Paul in 1 Corinthians 13, 11-13? It's all about perspective. Paul writes, it's like this. When I was a child, I spoke and thought and reasoned as a child does. But when I grew up, I put away childish things. Now we see things imperfectly in a poor mirror. But then we will see everything with perfect clarity. All I know now is partial and incomplete. But then I will know everything completely, just as God knows me now. Perspective. Shall we be honest for a moment and admit that we do not see anything with perfect clarity? Our perspective is all messed up. We see things like how Pablo Picasso painted them, all twisted and distorted. When Jesus read those words of Isaiah in his own hometown synagogue, his home church, if you like, the people who were so trapped in their own distorted perspective, do you know what they wanted to do to him? Do you remember? They wanted to kill him. They wanted to push him off a cliff. Jesus' whole life and whole ministry is punctuated by conflicts of perspective. Right from Bethlehem, where he came as in humble means, others saw his coming as a threat. And like Herod, they tried to destroy him. The Bible is full of people who refuse to take off their blinders to expand their peripheral vision. There's Herod, there's the Sadducees, the Pharisees, the religious leaders, the Roman governor, Pilate, and on and on and on. Even today, many people will not take their blinders off. They're content to sit in front of a poor mirror and see things dimmed by a faulty perspective. We cannot see the good news because, frankly, we don't want to see the good news. The only perspective we value is our own and that of those who agree with us. Remember the guy with the t-shirt? The only good news we see as valuable is what meets the immediate needs of my perspective. Maybe the reason we don't feel much like a bridegroom in our wedding suit or a bride with her jewels is because we would rather everyone see us in our misery and in our filthy rags. Because at least we know that these are of our own creation. I came across a quote from a book that with a very interesting title, The Trivialization of God. It's by Donald McCullough. In his book, McCullough quotes Freeman Patterson, noted Canadian photographer, describing barriers that prevent him from seeing the best photo possibility. And he writes this, letting go of the self is an essential precondition of real seeing. When you let go of yourself, you abandon any preconceptions about the subject matter. which might cramp into your photographing in a certain and predetermined way. When you let go, new conceptions arise from your direct experience of the subject matter, and new ideas and feelings will guide you as you make pictures. In the spiritual life, just as in photography, being preoccupied with self is the greatest barrier to truly seeing. But when we get past it, when we catch glimpses of the extraordinary beauty, that is what Isaiah was trying to tell you, tell Israel. That's what Jesus was saying in his hometown. If beauty is in the eye of the beholder, then we better get our eyes focused on the right thing. And I can think of no important message for us as we go through this Christmas season. Here we are celebrating the most selfless, beautiful gift ever given to humanity, and the beauty gets lost because we focus on the bad news that this season brings. I hear it all the time. We hear it all the time. Oh, man, I hate those busy malls. Oh, I'm just dreading cooking that Christmas dinner. What am I going to get that uncle or aunt? They're so hard to buy for. Just think about how high my visa bill is going to be in January. Oh, don't tell me I got to drive 4 hours just to listen to screaming kids. Kids who sit there amongst all the wrapping paper and say, is that all there is? And then, oh, I got to get back. I got to get back home because I got to go to the Boxing Week deals. I don't know if you're familiar with a very funny movie that it's played on TV every year. It's called Four Christmases. I don't know if you've seen this. It's with Vince Vaughn, who with his wife plots every year to escape from their family obligations at Christmas by going on a vacation. They do this because both sets of parents have divorced, so they end up having to go to four different Christmas events. The couple in question does not tell their families doesn't tell them they're going on vacation. Instead, to make it look good, they tell them they're going on some volunteer relief mission. Right? And the story's premise is, of course, their little secret gets out. And to make amends, they've got to go to all four Christmas dinners, and we get to visit with them. The story resonates with us because you know what? Who hasn't dreamed of going to Tahiti instead of having Christmas dinner with their family? Who wouldn't like to lay in the sun basking instead of having kids wake them up at 3 o'clock in the morning? Is that all there is? If we feel like that, then our perspective's a mess. We see things dimly, even despite the thousands of colored lights that we hang on our eavesdrop. Jesus coming at Christmas is good news. He has come to bind up the brokenhearted. He's come to set the prisoner free. He's come to declare the year of the Lord's favor on all people, especially those who feel defeated by life. And if we can't see the good news in our Christmas celebration, it's not God's fault. It's our perspective that's out of whack. Every aspect of the Christmas story, from the birth in the stable to the wise men from the east, is designed to shatter our perspective and get us to begin to see from God's perspective. And with God, there's always, I mean always, good news. I read a story a few years back about a woman who climbed up on the top of a 50-story building in New York City. And she was going to jump to her death. The police suicide squad took the threat very seriously. But she didn't look like the typical person who would do this kind of thing. She was dressed in a very expensive dress, and she had a lovely fur coat on, and she was very careful about her appearance. She was all made up. But regardless of her appearance, every attempt to convince her to come down from the ledge was a failure. One of the police officers had called his pastor to come to the scene to pray for the woman. The pastor came, and after appraising the situation, he asked the police captain if he could give it a try, if he could go up close enough and talk to her. Captain shrugged and said, well, we tried everything else. What do we got to lose? Except her life, obviously. The pastor started walking towards the woman. She screamed, "Don't come any closer or I'll jump." He took a step backward and called out to her, I'm really sorry that you believe no one loves you." I got her attention. It also got the attention of the suicide squad down below. It was a real unusual question, wasn't it? "I'm sorry that you believe no one loves you. Your children and grandchildren must not love you. Apparently they never gave you any attention," he said. With this, the woman took a step towards the pastor and said, "My grandchildren love me. My whole family does. My grandchildren are wonderful. I have 8 grandchildren." The pastor took a step closer to the woman and said, "Well then, you must be very poor or you wouldn't want to take your own life." The woman, who was a little bit overweight, said, "Do I look like I go without meals? We live in a very nice apartment in Central Park. I'm not poor." Pastor took another step and was only 3 feet from her. "Then why in the world do you want to kill yourself? I don't understand." The woman thought for a moment and said, "You know, I don't remember." You know, there's plenty of good news brought by Jesus. We can't see it. Then we need to ask that with all the presents we open this Christmas, that the one we need most is that God would open our eyes. Because if you want your life to be better, if you want it to be more hopeful, then you need Jesus in the very heart of it. Because Jesus makes all the difference.